And not everything I'm going to talk about today is illegal. But everything that I'm going to talk about today is bad for regular Americans.
Now, the Maggie Dawn Show continues.
I'm a geek. I'm a nerd. I'm a data wonk.
From Congress and courts to burgers and baseball.
I talk about food a lot on the show. It's a thing. I am a foodie.
Once again, here's lawyer and economist Maggie Dawn.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome if you're just joining us. Welcome back if you're rejoining us. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm very excited to be joined by former U.S. Attorney James Santel for the next hour of this fine program. And to just whet your appetite a wee bit more, we've got Dan Schaefer coming in at 5:30, giving us a little bit of that state slate. He's the creator of the Recombobulation Area. We're going to talk about all things Wisconsin and in the news. You're not going to want to go anywhere. And a bit more breaking news this afternoon, which will set up our discussion of Donald Trump's nominee to head the D.C. U.S. Attorney's Office, a guy by the name of Ed Martin. Oh my goodness, problematic in oh so many ways. But here are some of the bits of breaking news just this afternoon. Apparently, unbeknownst to the White House, Pete Hegseth issued an order to stop three freight airlines operating out of Dover Air Force Base in Delaware and a U.S. base in Qatar. He stopped 11 flights, so three freight airlines, 11 total flights, loaded with artillery shells and other weaponry bound for Ukraine. It basically set off a series of panicked messages across the U.S. Transportation Command, which is called Transcom. Who halted the flights? Was it a permanent pause? Who authorized this? What was going on? The top national securities and the Pentagon and White House and State Department had no idea what had happened. Within a week, the flights were back in the air. But that order originated from Pete Hegseth. That is bananas. You're going to just stop the aid flights and you didn't get a direct okay from the president to do that? Absolutely shocking. The other bit, also sort of national security, tangentially related, but related to this bigger picture we're going to discuss in the context of Ed Martin's nomination to be a U.S. attorney in the D.C. District, is that just yesterday news came out that our intelligence agencies here in the United States had issued a memo that very clearly said that Venezuela does not direct the Tren de Agua gang, which was the entire completely made up, but that was the entire alleged basis for Donald Trump's invocation of the Alien Enemies Act to then unconstitutionally deport a bunch of people without due process. So you get this sense that no one knows what is going on, and that you do not have the right people in the right places doing these incredibly important jobs, and that the people who may be in the administration, for example, in the national security apparatus and the intelligence apparatus, and career officers in the Department of Defense are not being listened to. All of this, Mr. Santel, brings me to Ed Martin. This guy is so problematic in so many, 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 many ways, which you and I are going to discuss. But you are a former U.S. attorney. And I wanted to ask you, can you describe for people the sorts of qualifications that one needs to become a U.S. attorney? Like the depth of the vetting process, every person that I've ever talked to that has been through any of the vetting process, whether it was being vetted for an appointment by Governor Evers, an Article III judicial appointment, or consideration for the U.S. attorney, even fellowships in the Attorney General's office, SG's office. And I went through one of those myself as a federal appeals court clerk, small potatoes to a U.S. attorney. I entered that process thinking, like, oh my gosh, do I have enough cred? Do I have enough experience to do this job in the way that I know it needs to be done. Tell us more, Jim, about what is typically expected of U.S. attorney nominees.
Absolutely, Megan. Once again, delighted, honored to be with you this afternoon to talk about all this breaking news. And it does all lead back to Ed Martin in some ways, direct and indirect, because that goes to the fundamental issues that you're also discussing when it comes to Pete Hegseth, this NSC issue as well. It has to do with both competence and communication, right? Yep. Fundamentally, every U.S. attorney, we know this well, there are 92 of them, 93 districts in the United States of America. 92 United States attorneys. And who are they? They're the chief federal law enforcement officers in the particular district. And so you and I right now are in the Eastern District of Wisconsin, Western District. There are 93 districts around the country. And each one of those people, men and women, are responsible for ensuring that the federal law is enforced. They're not the direct bosses, but they're responsible for everything from prosecution, civil litigation. You worked in this area, obviously, when you served as our counsel in the in Milwaukee County as well. They're responsible for ensuring that everybody is communicating, they're coordinating, and that law enforcement is directed in perhaps not the same direction, but at least has a common mission every single day. And the competence should be, of course, fundamentally, you're a lawyer, okay. Ed Martin, I guess, crosses that or checks that box, right? But beyond that, the fact that he comes into this position with no prosecutorial experience, right? He hasn't done
Let's say that more plainly. Right. The guy has never prosecuted a criminal trial. Like, he's never stood up from gavel in to jury verdict. He has never prosecuted a single criminal case.
Never appeared before the grand jury, right?
Correct. Whether that's in state or federal court, never did it.
Right.
And that's the job that he is being nominated for.
Never worked to him, as you and I have done in our careers, never worked to impanel a jury, made a jury selection, a thing called motions in limine. Again, I'd love to be with you because we're both these nerdy wonks, right? Motions in limine, these motions before a trial that talk about evidence, whether it's going to come in or not. Never presumably cross-examined witnesses in those settings, presented evidence, introduced all, and just, again, the basic competence isn't there. And yes, you desperately need that. Why? Because you've got to be able to understand the challenges of all the investigative agencies with which you're working. You got to be able to understand the assistant U.S. attorneys, the lawyers around you are coming in and saying, you know what, I just got beaten up in court. I was just successful in making this argument. Opposing counsel is doing this. I've got an agency head is doing this. You've got to have that background. It's fundamental competence, as you well know well, Maggie. And this guy, again, many other problems with what which we'll talk about, I'm sure. But the fundamental through the door kind of thing, not even there. Not even there.
It is beyond the pale, this particular nomination, in a way that even, and to all the amazing people who work in the FBI, this is different than like the Cash Patel problem.
Yes, yes.
And the reason I'm going to say it is, and Jim, you can please chime in on this. There is, I can say this as a person who has led a large governmental law office.
Corporation counsel is a big deal. I will say it out loud, right?
Thank
you. A lot of responsibility in all sorts of areas.
If you cannot command at least some respect of the lawyers and the paraprofessionals that work for you, you actually can't do the job.
You can't.
They cannot like you. They can disagree with different decisions. But if they do not believe that you know what the heck you're doing, you can't do those jobs. And that sort of assessment is made before you show up on day one, and it is constantly reevaluated by every single lawyer that works for you. Lawyers, for all the jokes, there's some truth to the idea that lawyers think they're the smartest people in every room. They think they're smarter than their boss lawyer. There's just an element there. This guy, I cannot imagine, unless he has pushed out a ton of prosecutors out of the D.C. office, but unless he hires a bunch of toady lackeys that know less than he does, he's going to be staring across a table from people who, inside their heads, have no respect for this guy.
Right. And every moment that they're having those discussions across those tables, they're going to be thinking, I'm soliciting the judgment and advice and counsel from someone who's never been there, never had to argue a case, never had to present these kinds of things. And it does make a big difference. Frankly, every so often in all administrations, you know this well, Maggie, there are U.S. attorneys who are plucked up. There's always those political few who are put in those positions. And yep. the wise ones, not all of them, but the wise ones say, you know what? I don't know. I'm not qualified to do this. I'm going to surround myself by all the people who do. And yes, I've got this position, and they are going to basically step in for me and tell me, basically the puppeteer, if you will, tell me what this is all about, because I shouldn't be here, fundamentally, is the problem.
And the failure to acknowledge that, right? And I'm going to speak a little bit about gender here because it comes up. It has taken me, I'm now, gosh, almost 30 years, maybe over 30 years. I don't want to do the math on the air into my career as a lawyer. And I still, anytime I'm going to be on the radio with you, Jim, in a courtroom, in a committee hearing, whatever that may be, I will still over-prepare beyond any reasonable measure, because I believe as a young female lawyer from Wisconsin in one of the world's largest law firms based out of New York, I always felt like somebody's going to find me out, that I'm not competent enough. And so I have approached every job I've taken as a lawyer with this almost reverential sense of respect for the other lawyers that I'm working with and the job that needs to be done. Let's tease a little bit, Jim, what is also problematic about Ed Martin, because it isn't just his incredible lack of applicable experience. Here are a few other tidbits. We're going to talk about these on the flip side. 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. What do we do, ladies and gentlemen, when people who are utterly incompetent, be they conservatives or liberals, be they Republicans or Democrats, fans of the MAGA movement or not, if we see someone who is objectively incompetent being appointed to these high-level positions, what do you think our response should be as Americans first, not as partisans, not as liberals and progressives and conservatives and Republicans, but as Americans, when we see this sort of incompetence occurring, what should our response be for the good of us all? 855-752-4842. Here is a little taste. Ed Martin, Donald Trump's nominee to be the U.S. attorney in the D.C. district, supported the, quote, Stop the Steal movement. So he was a big lie conspiracy theorist in 2020. He dismissed the pending January 6th cases once he was appointed to be acting U.S. attorney in D.C. He fired prosecutors who had worked on January 6th cases, though they were directed to do so by their bosses. He's launched an internal review, a witch hunt, an actual witch hunt, to scare those prosecutors into leaving their jobs, those that weren't outright fired. He has been making public comments about potential and pending cases, weighing in on them beyond the facts alleged in criminal complaints or in grand jury indictments, potentially prejudicing juries and undermining the potential of those prosecutions to bring about convictions. And I haven't even gotten to his time on Russian media and his lies about it to the U.S. Senate. We discuss all that next. And what should we do about it as thoughtful Americans right here on the Civic Media Radio Network? Keep it locked.